But for purposes of the exercise, please think of yourselves as being on a board or on the board of this company. So that's the position I want you to take, okay? The other thing I will say is I do a lot of what we call focus groups, and I lead them. And so in the focus groups that I do, I like to get people to talk. And so please don't be shy. I may call on you if you're looking at me like you want to say something but didn't raise your hand. I still might call on you. Don't take it. Don't hold it against me, but I really like your participation. The reason why I think this can be a successful exercise is you. And so please chime in. And don't. And there's no right answers here. There's just thoughts. Okay? So with that, I'm going to hand out the case study, give you a couple of minutes to read. Again, being the teacher that I was, just look up when you've read it, so I don't have to guess when we're sort of there. All right. So there you go. We'll take a couple of minutes to take a look at this. Have enough. We did. Okay. How many would you like? Call it seven.
Okay.
Call it seven board members. I'll give you another minute, okay? Okay, all right, so we can turn the microphone on now. And welcome, everyone. I don't know if you want to say anything.
I don't want to say anything more. Let's begin.
Okay, good. So I have given out a case study of a company we'll call Help the World, which is a mission-driven entity, a non-governmental organization that does work around the world in troubled areas. It might be war-torn. It might be a natural disaster. It might be just an undeveloped country. And the company, Help the World, is funded by these relief agencies, USAID, UN, World Bank, and other relief agencies around the globe. And that's where it makes its, or that's where it wins contracts to provide the services that it does. So I've given out a story or a scenario where the company is in a little bit of trouble. It's in hot water. There has been a spotlight series on the company and some of the spending concerns that were raised by former executives of the company who have left and have now been speaking to the press. There is one founder who still serves in the CEO role and is the key decision maker on all decisions. And he has put together a board of his friends and colleagues, all of whom love the mission. They're driven by the mission of helping the world, okay? So the question I'm gonna ask for all of you is, there's lots of stuff in here, right? There's things that you're all seeing. And let's just go around the room. Just give me something that jumped out at you when you read it. I heard one thing that you said, because I was driven by it, but the first thing I heard was...
I had two reactions.
Yes.
The first was, I resigned.
Yeah.
Or I resigned last year. But
okay.
The second is that, my second thought was, what would I do if I were sitting on this board?
Yes.
Which is, immediately suggest to the board we have an independent third party come in, who comes in to do a forensic audit.
What, yeah, okay.
Because we don't know what we're dealing with.
Okay, right. So there's an unknown, unknown factor, and you're seeing that in the scenario.
Right.
Okay, perfect. What do you say?
I'm a little surprised. I spent many, many decades in government contracting, and I am a little surprised that the U.S. government would award a contract to this type of NGO without some sort of verification and validation that they had the systems in place to be able to execute on a contract.
Right.
So, for your case study, you sort of have to assume that that happened. But you'd also have to figure out a way to respond to this where you were working with the government agencies that also do audits and look at things like irregularities in spending and controls and many of the same things that a proper audit committee and external audit would have looked at.
Okay.
So you can't just go with the external entity. You're also going to have to work with the government.
Well, clearly.
Right.
Go ahead.
I'll come around. Can I just define, though?
Yeah.
So when I say forensic audit, I'm talking about the folks who come in to really look at the whole business.
So you're looking beyond just dollars.
I'm
you're looking at,
just
right.
Accounting.
Yes.
So who are you calling in? McKinsey?
No. No,
okay.
No detail.
You're calling for a broader, deeper assessment. Gotcha.
Thank you.
Right. I'll come around.
Thank you. Well, the company's misnamed. It should have been named Help the Founder.
Yeah.
Help the World. And it's a sad case of doing extremely well while attempting to do good.
Mm-hmm.
There's a foundational problem. The foundational problem was in the governance of the entity in the very, very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
That crafting a group that was made up of friends and family, in effect, both at the operating level and at the governance level in terms of oversight, is foundational problem number one. And Ellen's totally correct that there need to be more specific actions, the last paragraph suggests that they took appropriate actions, but they didn't go deep enough, very frankly.
Okay.
They should.
We're going to drill down on some of these. I just want to get sort of the what you're seeing as issues. Go ahead, and then I'll come around.
The board was there for window dressing.
The board was there for window dressing.
Because of the 501c3 requirement.
Right.
And that never changed through the life of the entity.
Dive in, please.
Yes, Susan.
40 years of history, from what I'm looking at, founded in the late 70s. So you've got ostensibly 40 years of history. I want to see 40 years of 990s. as you know, a starting point to try to figure out at what point there was a divergence. The other thing is they started off with a very specific focus mission that had to do with nutritional assistance, incredible scope creep, and as a result they began taking...
It goes to your issue, it really does, but you're right.
...in areas where they had no expertise whatsoever, in countries where they didn't have the infrastructure or the relationships to deliver what they were promising, and they acknowledged that at some point in the middle of page two.
Yep.
And then the other question I have is, what's the overarching budget here? Because one specific contract is $250,000. How much money is there overall, and how quickly did it rise to those kind of numbers?
Okay, all good questions. I'm just getting thoughts, so we'll drill down.
I think, you know, obviously the founder, Johnson.
$250,000,000
Yeah. Yes. And that was just one of the contracts. So
pretty clearly the founder's downplaying the issue, and you know, by pointing to one particular person or department that seems to be at the end of the chain rather than, you know, acknowledging a more systemic or broad problem, that seems to be a fairly big issue.
Very good. What do you have? I'll get you, Jose. Go ahead.
The only other comment I had, because I agree with what you're saying, what most folks have said, the only thing that would go against that I think needed to have a sensitivity is, if you're dealing with Iraq and Iran, getting stuff done, you're working in cash, there's not going to be a whole, you know, so the whole record keeping is not going to be the traditional record keeping, so there's going to be a sensitivity to that. That being said, you can't have that much money disappear without...
Right. I'll get all of you. Yeah.
Right.
I'll go around, Jose. But I think it's a good point. I mean, in some of these places that they were working in, they weren't actually doing the work. They're hiring people they don't even know because they can't go in.
Right.
So it's a very good point.
Yeah.
Jose?
Yeah, you know, pretty soon the next day, the subpoena from the local U.S. Attorney's Office
is coming.
In.
Yep.
And so I think you have to get a law firm, as that is, to come in. I don't know if there's a committee of independent directors that could be assembled that the law firm would report to. They're the ones who are retaining the forensic accounting firms that are privileged.
Right.
And then you probably need a crisis management PR firm, I think.
So that the vultures will be circling.
You've got a lot of donors out there.
Yep. Okay. I got those points. Any?
I just want to add what surprised me, and it's what everybody said, is what about filing requirements? I mean, it's a 501c3. It's like, where is the board when it comes to annual filings? There's a governance issue, but also there's an agency, whether it's IRS or whoever else, looks at these agencies for that. Because 501c3, I think you need to get recertified.
That's a 990.
Yeah.
But the point is, they need to get recertified or approved again and again.
Think of it this way, is everything is sort of now, think of it as everything is now boiling to the surface. Everything was sort of... Mm-hmm. Now it's here. So that's where we are. Did somebody say over here, did I say anything?
Well, to that end, you've got these board members, and let's be real, people are going to manage their incentives. At this point in time, it's survival of the fittest.
Well, there
so
you go.
I don't think they're going to be all about best practices for audits, and their goals, their motivation are going to be, how am I going to protect myself when people come in.
So it's a personal protection. You're talking about personal liability that each board member is feeling. It's sort of what you were sort of intimating at, right? Okay, anything else that anybody else wants to add? Yeah, go ahead.
Do you know policy looks like?
That's what I was wondering.
What was the size of this charity before the $250 million?
Yeah, it's one of those that, you know, when the Iraq and Afghanistan wars started, it was not like this. And then they just started winning contracts, and then another contract, and then another contract.
So you had no need to have like a professional management team.
It was sort of, I'll call it a patchwork organization. and I tried to put that in there. So you're right. It's one of those, and if I can put it bluntly, ask backwards, you know, structure. It was, we need somebody here, we need somebody there. We need a builder in, you know, Ethiopia who knows how to build, design build healthcare centers. It was, and that they...
The founder doesn't have the experience or a lot of the organization.
Nothing. Go ahead.
I'm curious to learn more about the CFO, the whole finance department. I know the founders make all the decisions, but you're accountable.
Okay, CFO. Good. So it's a very good point. Somebody else said something else? Go ahead.
I just would add that, you know, when this major contract came in, I think that the board sort of recognized at this point, because of the severity and the fact that it was a government contract of this magnitude, that they needed to up their game and they needed to change and develop more responsibility or bring in other independent parties.
And I think you're right. And I think that there was a level of effort to do that. As the company continued to expand and grow and win these new contracts, the founder, again, to his credit or to his detriment, started to bring in some more independent people. You know, I think he heard from somebody that you need to bring in not your missionary friends who are on the board. You know what I mean? And so he did start to bring in some independents. So now we are there at the day of that. The letter comes in and in-house counsel gets the call from the agency, we want to talk to you, right? And so it happens to be the day of a board meeting, and the board is convened and finds this out, right? That's the scenario, so here we are. And so we have now asked the founder to leave the room. So he's out. So here we are. What do you do? I mean, there's so many issues, and with all of these things I am going to drill down on, but sort of what's your priority in terms of all of the things that you mentioned? I got 10, there was probably 15. I got 10 things that we've got to handle, you know, immediately. Somebody said survival, somebody said, you know, the press and dealing with that, counsel and, you know, agency audits, all of those kind of things. We're here. What are we doing first? Anybody? Yeah.
Step number one is to be transparent. Make a commitment to be open.
Okay.
Step number two.
So you're doing that as a board. So you're going to take over sort of the leader. Again, he was the board chairman. He's running the meetings. He's giving you the agendas. He's out of the room now.
Yeah.
That's where I am. So transparency, you're saying we need to talk to
everyone. We collectively need to be transparent. We need to consider both our mission, not necessarily the survival of the entity, but a commitment to the stakeholders and the mission that we're fulfilling, and who our client is, with whom maybe we need advice, but we have fiduciary responsibility to somebody. If we don't know that, we need to discover who that fiduciary responsibility is to. And in order to prove how serious this is, I'm gonna make a motion that the chairman and the CEO be suspended.
Okay.
Chairman and the same person be suspended.
This, and the CFO, you're saying as well.
No, he just said the CEO.
Just the CEO.
Chairman,
just the
CEO.
Okay.
We'll deal with the CFO at a better time.
Okay. So those are the first things you would do. Anybody else? What are you going to do?
I would, first of all, immediately separate the chairman. I mean, the chairman from the CEO. Mm-hmm. Whether you suspend the CEO or not, immediately you get him out of the chair's job. Assign responsibilities collectively amongst the board members for the things that need to be done. And the board has to take control of dealing with the outside, both the public relations and you may tell the CEO what he has to say, but he's not in charge of the board anymore.
So just to sort of to put that into a nutshell, one, he's no longer the chairman of the board, or he's suspended from that position, so we need to appoint a new chairman, or an acting chairman at a minimum, right? The second thing
or
is...
Or a lead director.
Somebody, right, exactly. Somebody, that's some action that the board's going to take. And then the other thing is suspend him as the CEO of the company as well.
I'm not 100%
not there? Okay. On that.
That?
Okay.
I would make sure that the board can operate as a board without that person.
Okay, you're going to say something?
I was going to say, this is an organization that's been built on the charisma of the founder.
Right.
Your funding is tied up with the founder. Your donors, the affiliation and passion of your employees. So I'm going to say what you said. I think you rein that person in, but throwing them out, no. I think is potentially dangerous in terms of there are ongoing projects. There are people who are in Ethiopia, to your point, who are getting fed. So I don't think you can turf this person immediately. Mm-hmm. That may be the long-range plan, mm-hmm. but I think you need to create a succession plan for what happens while the board kind of reins in and takes control.
Okay, so it's up to, again, the board's consideration as to what do we do with them. Yeah. You're right, because there are these sort of factors that are going to weigh on both sides,
it's
whether or not
personality up until now.
It really has been. Go ahead.
I think that's exactly correct, because these are allegations. We don't know the extent or the depth, and are these statements that are being made limited to this chairman CEO, or are there others? And that's why I don't know who this outside consultant is, because that's a big question.
And, but it goes to your point of let's find out what it is. What are we facing?
That's where I started.
Yep.
Let's figure out what the facts are.
Okay.
So Mark, I understand your perspective.
Yeah.
I think there's some things that could occur by doing that, though, that are counterintuitive. He is the founder. He's looking personally, emotionally, and otherwise. So he's going to all of a sudden be a fighter against us. So now we're having to deal with the outside entities coming in. And now we're going to have to deal with him and his severance and all of that. I think due to timing and circumstances, we definitely want to reel this guy in. There's no doubt. But we want to methodically plan out how we're going to address it, such that we're not taking on too much all at once that is maybe not desirable.
So not jump too fast in too many directions.
Well, I think if we did that, we'd be taking on other challenges that were unforeseen or unthought.
Okay.
But the question is, how much of what we read about in here was mere negligence, and how much of it was intentional? If it's intentional, you want to go this way. If it's just negligence, okay to wait a while.
Yeah, but I would
you can suspend the mission.
But Alan is right. You don't have the facts, and until you have the facts, you can't answer that.
Right.
My hypothesis and assumption is just like Mark's. This was deliberate.
Okay. I will get both.
Fraud, etc. That's where my gut's going.
Okay.
But facts. We need to be able to back that up. We can't go and just have these assumptions.
Okay.
Well, so that should be goal number one.
Is the goal number one, Mike?
To determine the extent of culpability.
Yeah, again, it goes to Alan's point. Okay, let me get some other thoughts, and then I'll keep what I'm hearing, I'm going to pull together.
What Jose said earlier was, get counsel so you can keep it confidential, you've got attorney-client privilege. But the other thing is that bothers me is the facts that nepotism, sloppiness, you don't know how far this goes in the organization, so I think you need to get him immediately out, and you need to get something rolling so you can figure out what the heck is actually going on.
So again, it goes back to, again, the deeper dive into what's going on. I'm going to get you in a second, Jose, but this is what I'm hearing on really two sides of the table, and you started it.
I would just like maybe some kind of middle ground would be a committee of independent directors, if it's possible. I know that the scenario is everybody has got a problem, and I don't know if there are any subset of directors that are relatively new, don't have a 40-year history of sticking their head in the sand.
Yeah.
But if there are some directors who have some plausible credibility, I would say you could just have a committee of those directors say you three are responsible for conducting the internal investigation, hiring whoever you need to hire to report to you, and you report to us.
Yeah.
That way you don't get into the whole, what if we sack the CEO there? How's that going to play?
Well,
exactly. For the time being.
Well, presumption of innocence, but there's also many things going on all at once, right? These are not just like isolated things. These are many things that you're all bringing up. So that's a good point. I just wanted to go back to the attorney-client privilege on this side, which I heard from two, but then the idea of transparency, because it's a not-for-profit, it's got a mission, it's got, it's got stakeholders, it's got the donors, it's got all of these people are very dependent on the services that are being delivered. Right? So you've got that dynamic as well. So, I understand attorney-client privilege as well as I am an attorney, but I always worry about the transparency in this kind of setting, because you have to deal with the press and you have to deal with the public agencies.
It's a question of what you're transparent about. So what you want to be transparent about is, okay, the boards come in, they're stepping up to their responsibility, they're hiring independent auditors to come in and look at the organization. In the meantime, they're totally committed to the organization fulfilling its contractual right. obligations to the customers who happen to be the people who give you the contracts, as well as the customers who are the recipients of the aid. So you're going to attempt to continue to fulfill your function while you hire people to audit the agency, and you'll share those findings when they come out. But there's nothing to be transparent about until you have the facts.
Yes and no.
Other than this
yeah.
is what you're going to do.
Except there's an immediacy. You know what it's. I mean, there is an immediacy because the press is all over you, and now the agency's all over you.
But
right?
that's what you tell them. We're
yeah.
stepping up. We're going into crisis management mode. We're hiring the expertise
okay,
that we
perfect.
Need. We're going to get the job done.
Right.
We're going to continue to execute on our function in the meantime. And as we learn things, we will take actions and share those with you
okay.
about what we've learned and what we need to do to fix the organization.
So
that's
so,
the transparency.
Okay, and I get that. Jose?
There's one problem with that.
Yes.
And the problem is that you cannot allow the person who is ultimately responsible, whether he's complicit or their sins of omission, to have responsibility for continuation of the mission and to be in a place where he or she, he in this case, can influence the outcome and the efficacy really of the investigation itself. So I'm not saying that person should be fired. I'm saying that it is best for the organization and his mission and his own vision, or a lifelong vision and effort, to put him aside, to suspend him, to say very, very clearly, we don't know whether the gentleman is responsible or not, but we are taking an action that proves our commitment to transparency and to get to the bottom of it while continuing the mission, even if it requires somebody from the outside have an interim
response. So having said that, and again, I'm hearing all of the things that you're saying, and it's great input. I think the foundational question is, are we going to survive, and do we want to continue, you know, as an organization? I mean, I think that we all have to come to that consensus to do all of the things that we want to do, right? Are we going to continue in operations, right? Isn't that sort of fundamental here?
Or is that even a decision that we have to make, meaning what if all of a sudden they cancel all the contracts?
Yeah.
They don't care
yeah.
how much time it's going to take, et cetera. We're going to cease
and desist. And the reality is there's many contracts with many agencies. No, nobody knows what's going on. They're all over the place. Go ahead, Doug.
That's precisely the point I want to make. I think the board needs to assess the quality of senior management and what they know. Founders in a bunch of new areas recently. He's run a hub and spoke management structure, and people seem to be isolated from other senior managers. Is there anybody there with the remotest possibility of stepping in and assuming direction from the board that can do this without it crashing and burning in days? Or do they have to bring somebody in from the outside who's got enough breadth of experience that at least they know the questions to ask in these different areas while all this is going mm-hmm. on? The alternative is you have somebody on the board that could do it, but the yeah. board doesn't seem to be until they were resigning to this point. Engaged enough to understand.
So I think that's right. You're all very experienced, right? And I'm wondering if you were found yourself in this scenario, do you start looking at your neighbors and saying, you know, where are you? What you've been here for 30 years, or you know, you've been here for 20. You know, maybe it's something that you know I just got here like 3 years ago. And do you start looking? Does that happen on boards? You know, where you start looking at, especially in these crises. I mean, again, this is a crisis, right? Does it happen in this kind of things? I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Luckily, I haven't lived through.
No. Good. You're right. Go ahead.
I do want to say one thing.
Yeah.
So far, there haven't been any facts presented. This is all allegations, and the spotlight series is created to sell newspapers. Sometimes they do a great job, but when
right.
they get the idea that something is
right.
an expose, they find people who will support that.
Yeah.
So I think we might be moving a little hastily if we suspend the CEO until we
without some more facts. Okay.
Bringing in an outside
yeah.
person who could take on the general management role could be an important support for this
sure.
for this consultant and for the board.
Okay.
So I think hence
I think that let me just get Susan and I'll come back to you.
I think also this is not
a binary decision.
No.
This is not we continue or we discontinue. It may be that we look at our operations, we expanded too quickly, these divisions are non-functional and or potentially, you know.
A very, very good point. Yeah, that's, you got to look inside.
We rein it in and say, you know what, when we were passing out food in Mississippi, another third world country, that, you know, just saying that because of new law, sorry. But in situations like that, you say,
look inward.
Rein it in,
yeah.
And these we're going to, you know, basically find another not-for-profit that can help.
A terrific point. And that goes sort of to what one of you said, it sort of creating maybe a committee or something of that point. And that would be one of the things. Go ahead, Joe.
That's the trend that I was on. But you're not going to make that decision at this first board meeting. You're going to, part of this is going to be at some point after you get over the initial crisis management is going to be, okay, we need to refocus on what is the mission of this organization? How do we focus on our mission? How do we responsibly handle the contracts that we've signed, either to finish them and sunset them or pass them off to another organization, or maybe the whole organization merges with another organization. But that's a sort of renewed strategic plan, and it's really not the subject of the first board meeting, other than to say that has to be on our timeline in the next whatever months in order to refocus that. But first, we're in crisis management mode. And that's not the first thing you do in crisis management, other than maybe add it to the list of things that you say publicly are going to happen over the next period of time. We will reestablish the mission of this organization and figure out how to do the things that we're good at.
So Ellen raised the question, and I'm going to go back now to some of the things that we talked about and then think about how we build something in terms of an approach to addressing this. But Ellen said, I would resign. I know, but that was your first reaction. No, and I think that would be a lot of people's reaction.
I don't think at this point, you know.
You'd put that on hold for a little bit.
Of course.
It kind of depends on what the board decides. If the board is still mostly old buddies and they're circling the wagon to figure out how to protect themselves on the CEO, then I'd still resign.
Yes.
But if the board is willing to step
and
up
active,
to the responsibility,
right.
You know, then maybe you stick around and participate.
How likely is it
that
the board actually has the capacity to step up and know what things they ought to be doing?
Because
heretofore, they haven't demonstrated any capacity.
They'll
do
it to survive.
Mm-hmm.
They'll know they have to.
Yeah, and again, those are very good points. I'll get you a second.
You have to protect yourself.
So, these are very, you know, they're, other than the fact that he knows them, they are very qualified. Okay, they've had experience.
They're not stupid people. They've done a lot of other things.
Exactly. So assume that they know, and there are people that are actually quite strong and will step up. Go ahead.
So going back to Ellen's resignation question, if there's founded malfeasance, this board had a fiduciary responsibility.
That's right.
And if you resign the board rather than staying to
fix it,
you're probably more.
Well, that's right, and you know that the thing that I know in the work that I do that I'll tell you about is taking some steps, and it's reactive, proactive, right? It's reacting to all of this, but proactively to fix, you know, and demonstrate that you fixed it. That's exactly I think that's the approach that you're going to take. Is that kind of, well, let's find out what the problem was, and let's show the world that we got it, and we fixed it. So I think you're right there. So that was number one, was resign, and I think most people would stay on, and let's see what we can do and see where we go. So now we're at that point where we've got to decide, so what do we do next? And so Jose mentioned the idea of creating a special committee so that the entire board is not dealing with this, or we might have 2-3 action committees that are developed, right, that are focused on certain areas, right? So Jose, just give us your thought on the crisis management committee that you were thinking of.
Well, yeah, if you wanted to create more than one, but I think one committee could do this, and given that it depends on the composition of the board, but it might make sense to just have one committee do this, at least my thoughts are. But you do need to have a crisis management firm. I think that this is important. You know, like Judy Smith's outfit in Washington, D.C., and the show scandal is based on her, right? So she works with lawyers. They know how to coordinate, and manage both the press as well as manage the certain investigation that they have to do. So I would think that that would be, again, I don't know what the financial situation is.